Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Richard, today we're going to talk about the different types of people who abuse substances.
That's right. And this is especially relevant to those who are maybe just beginning to experiment. Also for parents of children who are entering that age, that developmental stage where the children are going to start experimenting. At least they're going to get exposed,
right?
And they may experiment. So yeah, it's a helpful way to think about what am I dealing with.
Yeah, and it's a little bit of a tough topic to talk about because, and I think that we want to start out sort of with the disclaimer that in no way are we minimizing the importance and concern associated with substance use.
Absolutely.
But we're going to talk about it in ways that may come across as though we're minimizing the use, but we're certainly not.
Right.
Right? Is that fair to say?
Fair. Good disclaimer.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, this is very, very serious business. We see far too many kids and adults who have gotten into trouble.
Right.
And we would in no way minimize the use of any of these substances.
Because substance abuse is an issue regardless of the reason, regardless of the pervasiveness. It's an issue. And we've seen far too many examples where, you know, the first time was the last time because they got into an accident or they had a problem and it just had them, you know, serious, if not life-threatening complications as a result. So we're not in any way minimizing, but we do want to talk about these different areas because it is important to at least consider them.
Exactly. Right.
Okay. So generally speaking, people who abuse substances, as you said, especially certainly at the beginning, fall into one of four categories.
Right.
They can adjust and they can go from one category to another, but it's usually one of these four categories.
That's right.
And the first is experimental.
That's right. And let's talk about teenagers, okay? Because that's that makes this a much easier discussion to have. It applies to all ages, but it's most easily seen in teenagers. Teenagers hit about early high school, 8th, 9th, 10th grade, about the time when they start driving. What driving gives them is the mobility to leave home.
Right.
Okay. They can leave before that, but now they're really mobile. They can go much farther from home. And so what the driving does and the maturity does, to be 15 or 16 or 17, they start to get invited to a different kind of party. Okay, the parties are thrown by upperclassmen, people who are now 11th and 12th graders.
Right.
So there are older kids doing more mature things, and it's the introduction of drugs and alcohol.
Okay.
It's their first real exposure to drugs and alcohol, and watching kids in their age group engage in drug and alcohol use.
Okay.
Okay.
So that to me falls into the second category,
which is
social. The social.
Well, no, the first time is they're just experimenting.
Well, because I think that people can. What we see many times with kids is that they begin experimenting even at home when they can get into mom and dad's
usually alcohol
liquor cabinet or they get a hold of mom or dad's cigarettes or if mom or dad smokes marijuana they get a hold of that and a lot of times the experimentation will start
it could start in middle school
and it oftentimes starts close to home because that experimentation certainly expands when they get to the parties and everything but a lot of times experimentation will begin at home.
Yeah, many students will take their parents' cigarettes if their parents smoke. They'll take their parents' alcohol. If parents have prescription drugs, they'll sneak a Xanax or Valium or Librium or something, some other drug. So yes, certainly experimentation begins at home.
Right.
Now, there are kids who will smoke a cigarette and say, "Oh, never again."
Right.
I did that with what is that stuff called? Snuff?
Yeah.
You know, when we were playing baseball, mm-hmm. you say, well, I'm going to be like a big leaguer and chew tobacco, and then mm-hmm. you're throwing up in the outfield.
You know, green.
Nasty, nasty stuff. And say, yeah. I'm never putting that in my mouth again. Mm-hmm. So we experimented and said no.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, some kids experiment
yeah.
and say yes.
Yes.
The majority probably don't know. Mm-hmm. We don't know because we don't know how many kids just... They try it and they say no. Other kids right. will drink and they'll say, oh, it's horrible. I'd rather drink Coke than whiskey.
Well, we do know that the prevalence of people who would admit to having used a substance mm-hmm. at least once in the past 12 months,
right.
there's a higher number of them than there are those who would meet criteria for substance right. use disorder. That's so right. it does seem as though the majority of people who experiment, who try something, decrease use and don't go back to it and don't stick to it.
And you can imagine, it's easy to admit that I tried it and didn't use it.
Right.
It's much more difficult right. to say I'm using.
Yeah, those numbers are hard to...
Kids aren't going to tell you that. Kids in high school, we give these surveys to high school kids or middle mm-hmm. school kids and they'll say, yeah, I tried it, but I tried mm-hmm. it once. They don't mind reporting that.
Right.
They're not going to report that they're still using because they're afraid to.
Because then they'll get in trouble.
They'll get in trouble.
Yeah.
Right. So first is experimenting.
Okay? And the second is the social piece.
And then they move on to...
Social use. Yeah. Right. So they're doing it with their friends, or they're doing it at these parties, or they're doing it in a way to, because of the influence and interactions and engagement with others.
Right. But it's the way most adults use these substances. Right. Most adults are social. I shouldn't say most
but
adults.
You know, that's what people say. Do you drink alcohol? Socially.
Yeah. So,
okay. social so what does
drinker.
That mean?
Yeah.
What does it mean socially? So you're saying that when you go out with your friends mm-hmm. or when you go out to dinner or something, you'll have a drink.
You know, I might, if, you know, we're having a get together, mm-hmm. you know, I might drink. Or we go out to have dinner in a restaurant and I might have a glass of wine. Right. I never drink wine at home.
Right.
But if I'm in a restaurant and I'm with other people and mm-hmm. somebody says, do you want some? I might have a glass. I never right. drink it at home.
Right. So what we're talking about with this, especially as it relates to teenagers, as you said, these are circumstances wherein someone uses the substance. But they're only using it in these social contexts.
That's
they're
right.
not using it before school when they're by themselves. They're not using it at home when they're by themselves.
That's
they're
right.
using it in these social contexts as a medium for interacting with other people.
And when I hear when teenagers say to me, well, everybody I know smokes mm-hmm. marijuana, okay? I think what they're saying to me, I don't have any data, I think what they're saying to me is, if I go to a party, most of the kids there are smoking marijuana
right.
on Saturday night. They're not smoking it Monday morning,
right.
Wednesday afternoon.
Right.
Their lives are normal, and they might not smoke it for another couple of weeks.
Right.
They go to a party, it's there, and they'll smoke it again. They're social users,
right.
okay? Just like most of us are social,
right.
social users.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, the third category include those who are self-medicating.
Right. I think that's the right word for it.
Right. So mm-hmm. this is where we're starting to differentiate between those that are not as big of a concern. This is where that disclaimer that I said at the beginning comes
right.
in handy.
Right.
These are the folks who are not as likely to just spontaneously stop use.
That's right.
The first two, the experimenters and the social users, they're more likely to, you know, if it's not mm-hmm. around, if it's not there, they're not going to use it. It's done. Mm-hmm. Once we start getting into these next two categories, we're talking about people who are using it for a distinct purpose,
right.
and which then increases the possibility that they're going to continue the use, even outside of particular contexts.
A few days ago, we talked about the effects of all this on the brain.
Right.
And when we talk about genetics, mm-hmm. we're talking about the genetic contribution, I think when we move into the area of self-medication,
right.
now we're talking about genetic predisposition, and we're talking about the tendency,
right.
And more of the tendency toward chemical dependence.
Right.
Because there are some kids who will try these drugs. Many will try them and they'll say, no, I'm not right. interested. Some will try them and say, well, if it's available, I'll do it. And then another group says, this is really good. I really feel good when I do this.
Right.
This helps me relax. It helps me to sleep. I really like it. They then go on to use the drugs alone.
Right.
Okay.
And so this is how it may look. even as we've gone through these different stages. So a person starts to by experimenting, then they're using it socially. Mm-hmm. But if they, as soon as they discover that I can't really have fun at a party unless I'm using.
Right.
So in essence, they're treating a social anxiety or something of that effect mm-hmm. with a substance. Now we're starting to get into that self-medication. People who have to drink alcohol before doing a presentation, or somebody right. who has to use a substance mm-hmm. prior to experiencing something to relieve the anxiety or the stress. You know, a person who has to drink on the mm-hmm. before they get home
right.
because of the stressful day and transitioning to home.
That's right.
That is sort of falls into this third category. Right.
Or the person who comes in and says, I can't get to sleep if I don't smoke right. a joint. That then I start to worry.
Right.
Because now I know we're into self-medication. A person, like you say, who can't go to a party right. and have fun unless they're a little bit buzzed, a little right. bit high. Any of those kinds of self-medicating behaviors,
right.
those become a concern.
Right.
Because now you're starting to move toward a chemical.
Right, because that gets problem. Us into the fourth category.
That's right.
You know, once you start using as to self-medicate, you're really at risk for moving into the fourth category, which is right. where we're really talking about an addiction.
Right.
We're talking about a chemical dependence mm-hmm. and a substance use disorder.
And here again, we get into one of those naughty problems of people say, well, you don't get addicted to marijuana. But if marijuana becomes your drug of choice, mm-hmm. if you need it to go to sleep at night, mm-hmm. if you need it to go to class the next morning, if you need it right after lunch so you can handle chemistry class right. or something, if you're using marijuana to self-medicate and then you take and becomes a central part, I mean, that's what we see, is it right. becomes the focal point of your mm-hmm. life. Now you're in that fourth category of mm-hmm. addiction.
Right.
Okay. So it really doesn't matter
right.
that it's not changing your brain the way an opioid would.
Mm-hmm.
It's still the same.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're addicted.
Yeah.
Because it meets all of those. It becomes the center of your life.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as we are using it as a self-medication, and then we build that dependence upon mm-hmm. it, and that overuse, and that.
We certainly are abusing
yeah.
because we're overusing it. Mm-hmm. We may not be chemically dependent,
yet.
But we're dependent.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like you said, psychologically
dependent. Right.
Are you and I addicted to caffeine?
I don't think so.
Okay. Why not?
Well, I said I don't think so. I typically have one nice-sized cup of coffee a day. I don't extend beyond that. I've stopped. I used to drink more than that, and now I only drink the one cup. Well, it's more than a cup, but
it's half a gallon. No, I'm just kidding. But some people might say, "Well, then you're addicted." No, we're not.
But I said no. But then, if I don't have that cup
right.
in the morning, I'll have a headache.
That's withdrawal.
Right.
So that's a little bit of dependence.
Right.
Right. Are we addicted?
No, I don't think so.
No, we're not. Right, and I don't think we are either.
You don't have an impairment in functioning.
Are we dependent? Yes.
Yeah.
Do we have an increased tolerance? No.
Mm-mm.
I don't drink a little more. I don't drink any more coffee today. I will not drink any more coffee in 2018 than I drank in 2017,
right.
than I drank in 2016.
Right.
So my consumption isn't
right.
increasing.
Right.
Okay. Will I have withdrawal? Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you meet some of the criteria, but not all of the criteria. And
right.
that's what you have to be careful of.
Right.
You know, this is really not what we would call an addiction. Am I abusing it? I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know, I don't drink it all day long.
Right.
Okay. We drink it in the morning and
I mean, we need to talk about this hit of whiskey you put in it every morning.
That's different. That's social drinking alone.
<That's right.
laughs> No, I don't do that. I don't do that.
This social drinking.
I am the world's worst. I have no
You'd
tolerance.
Really be asleep.
I have no tolerance at all. It's terrible. I mean, I can't even be an adult.
Mm-mm.
We had visitors over the holidays, and I mean, it's just terrible. I have no tolerance at all.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
I don't drink.
Because I don't know what it would happen.
Yeah.
I don't know what would happen if I did. I worked with a person one time. And as he would drink, he would become more aroused and more excited mm-hmm. and more funny and creative and all that stuff. And I thought, wow, if alcohol had that effect on me, if it kept me awake and made me more alert, I might be in trouble.
Right.
But it has just the opposite effect on me. It's right. really a sopper. I mean, it really yeah. puts me to sleep. I've never been able to drink very much. Very low tolerance. But I often wondered about that. And this person did become an alcoholic,
yeah.
you know, because it was mm-hmm. a stimulant for him.
Yeah.
And I said, I might be walking in the same shoes right. if it was a stimulant.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, can you imagine if you yeah. and I, we would be at risk if you yeah. and I drank. If it was a stimulant for us.
I just get lovey when I'm I drink. I just hug and
he gets lovey when he reads, when he drinks, when he has breakfast, when he eats dinner, when he drives his car.
I like hugs.
I'm gonna launch
we need a campaign.
Later in 2018. We'll get into that topic.
Yes. But
you get lovey.
I do get lovey. That word always reminds me of Thurston Howell and because he always called his wife Lovey
yes.
in Gilligan's Island. Mm-hmm. Those are our four categories of users.
Right.
And so the first two are of concern. It is concerning when our kids are experimenting, but usually those categories end and you know we're mostly concerned right. about the two where they're really using.
And to parents, you know, throughout the week we've been saying, make sure you know what you're dealing with.
Right.
You know, don't let these words confuse
right.
what's really going on. And if you're a parent and you have children who are entering this stage of development, chances are they're experimenting or they're using socially.
Right.
Okay. Very few kids go beyond that.
Right.
And we're talking about, you know, what the rate of addiction is, you know, 20 some percent or something
yeah.
like that. So most children, 8 or 9 out of 10, are going to remain at this experimental
right.
or social use stage through high school and college.
Right.
Okay. But yes, certainly keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
And
certainly.
Make sure they're not endangering themselves in any way.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So,
but know what right. you're dealing with. Yes.
Definitely. All right. Anything else? That's it?
No. That's it.
That is it for today
week.
And for this week. So, we have a lot planned. We'll share more
as we go along.
So, mm-hmm. thanks so much for joining us today. We hope that you will write to us and let us know what you think.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yes.
Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning. Thank you.